At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm your host, Richard Nelson. Does school choice destroy public education? This is precisely what teachers' unions have said about school choice initiatives in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Joining us to talk further about school choice is Betsy DeVos, who is the 11th United States Secretary of Education. Secretary DeVos is an accomplished business leader and advocate for school choice. She served as chairwoman for both the American Federation of Children and the Michigan Republican Party. She's married to Dick DeVos, and they both have 4 children together and 10 grandchildren. She's also the author of the new book, Hostages No More, The Fight for Education Freedom and the Future of America's Children. Secretary DeVos, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Richard. It's great to be with you.
Hey, I really do appreciate your time in joining us. As we mentioned, we're talking about off the air briefly that school choice is an increasingly important issue for the Commonwealth Policy Center. And really, more importantly, it's an important issue for parents who want what's best for their kids, what they think is the best education for their children. I think it's important to address some of the criticisms leveled towards you. Of course, you were the nation's highest education authority when you served as Secretary of Education just a couple years ago. But the education unions don't like you. That's no surprise. They don't like me either and CPC either. But this is what David Patterson of the KEA said when you visited Kentucky in 2020. He said that she will push a political agenda, which is school choice, that has been proven disastrous in states and school systems all across the country. So I think it's helpful for listeners to hear in your own words what you believe about school choice.
Well, Richard, education freedom, as I prefer to call school choice today, and we can talk about why with that expanded definition, but school choice and education freedom have been my passion for more than 3 decades. And before I ever went to Washington, I worked from state to state with leaders in every state to help them pass policies and advance policies that do empower families to make the best choice for their children's education. And it's not anti anything else. What it is pro-family, pro-child, recognizing that our one-size-fits-none school system has been failing way too many students for way too many years. And so this work has been ongoing. Many others have been shoulder to shoulder with me in these past decades. And happily and encouragingly, the last couple of years have really shown the momentum around empowering families and kids in this way, because the pandemic really laid bare to all families the failings of a system that just wasn't working for kids. And many families, many parents didn't really realize it until they saw it firsthand in their living rooms or their kitchens as their kids tried to learn at a distance. So this is really an effort for and in favor of kids, and ultimately our nation's future, because they do represent all of our future, and supportive of families, not buildings or systems, families and kids.
That's a really good distinction, and I want us to dig into that in just a few minutes. But to your point about school choice being embraced across the country, Kentucky is a school choice desert, if you will. States around us, like Ohio, Indiana, West Virginia, have recently passed expansive school choice options. I don't know if you've been involved there. Maybe you can come and help us in Kentucky, but we're not able to make headway. In fact, Educational Opportunities Account Bill that our legislature passed 2 years ago was struck down by the state Supreme Court. And they've put us in a position, Secretary DeVos, where we essentially have to have a constitutional amendment if we're going to have any meaningful school choice. So I want to go to that amendment in particular and share with you what the, again, the teachers union are, what they're saying about it. It says this bill, referring to the Education Opportunities Account, is yet another attempt to strip funds from our already underfunded public schools to divert public tax dollars to private schools that are not required to be held to the same standards, regulations, and transparency for the use of public tax dollars as our public schools. The bill provides no oversight of private schools that would receive public tax dollars for funding and doesn't require private schools to administer and report state standardized testing, all of which is required by our public schools. Now, it was the teachers' unions that helped to strike down the EOA bill. But I want, if we could address some of the points that they're making here, just, I guess, beginning with the idea that this would divert public tax dollars away from public schools. The EOA, I don't know how familiar you are with that concept, but this is where generous donors are funding, putting money into a nonprofit entity, and that entity distributes the resources to middle to lower socioeconomic students, parents who want options for their kids. And our state Supreme Court struck that down. So starting with that argument that it's diverting public tax dollars.
I think the first thing to come back at that allegation or that criticism with is that, you know, education is supposed to be about individual children, not about systems or buildings. And to characterize it as taking money away from one system to support another system is really, you know, just a misnomer around what education dollars and education funding is supposed to do. We have seen tremendous uptake in support for this notion that the money that's already designated for kids' educations should actually follow that child. Yeah. And that is so much more, I think, logical. It's also so much more personal, recognizing again that every child is different and they have different learning styles and learning needs. And yet the system that we've all lived with for 175 plus years now is essentially unchanged. And it's very much a top-down, one-size-fits-none approach.
Yeah.
And so anyone who really wants to see every child have the greatest and best opportunity to succeed and to uncover all of the gifts and talents that they have innately should be supporting this notion that the resources that we've already committed to kids' education should follow that child. And the best at accountability is the parents making those decisions, because they're the ones that care the most about their child, that love their child the most, and know what's best. And if a choice they make doesn't work out for whatever reason, they can then change that choice. I mean, that's the value of a real marketplace of options, is having those choices and holding all of those choices accountable by making a decision to avail yourself of them or not.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. Well said. So I'm going to play devil's advocate for a minute and actually just relay a conversation I had with a state representative in our Kentucky legislature. He's also a public school principal. He's the principal of an elementary school, very good school. They're performing at good levels, at above average levels academically. He has argued, Secretary DeVos, that if school choice were expanded in his area, it could potentially leave so parents that have the initiative that want to send their kids to a private school, it could potentially leave kids who need more attention, learning disabled, special needs kids. Now, how do you address that? What would be your response to something like that?
Well, first of all, if the school that he's presiding over is doing a good job for its students, no one would elect to go somewhere else or do something else. And so you can't say on the one hand that everybody's going to leave and it's going to be a problem. And on the other hand, say this is a really great school because those are mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. And so what I would say is having, you know, the states in which there have been choices for families over the longest period of time. And I generally like to cite Florida because their programs have been the broadest and, you know, available to the greatest number of students over the last number of years. In the districts where the highest percentage of students are making a choice other than their assigned school, and that could be another public, traditional public school in the district, it could be a charter school, could be a virtual school, it could be a private faith-based school, it could be a private secular school, any kind of option or opportunity, but where the highest percentage of kids are going to schools other than their neighborhood assigned school, all the student achievement levels are improving and going up. And so what you can definitively say, and there is lots of data to support this, is the more choice you have, the better everyone does. And that's what, you know, that's what Kentuckians have to look forward to when they actually enact a policy that's going to enable and allow families to make those choices and have that engagement and that agency for their kids' educations.
That's very, very well said. In your book, Hostages No More, The Fight for Education Freedom and the Future of America's Children, you begin by citing Terry McAuliffe, who was the Democratic nominee for governor of Virginia just 2 years ago. He debated Glenn Youngkin, and McAuliffe said, "I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach." Now, we all know how that ended. That became a big issue in that governor's race. Youngkin eventually won because he sided with parental rights. There were a number of things going on in the public schools that were controversial, and McAuliffe's comments didn't fly, and that arguably cost him the election. So what should the state's posture be towards parents or political candidates for that matter? And by the way, Secretary DeVos, we have a heated governor's race in Kentucky, and school choice is an issue here. There's a very, both of the candidates have distinct positions on school choice. But what should the state's posture be towards parents who have kids in public schools?
Well, I think, first of all, every elected official should be siding with and supporting parents and their primacy as their child's first educator, and supporting the fact that parents know what each of their children need to learn and to succeed. And they're the ones who are closest to that child. They should know and understand that empowering them with making the best choices for their children is the right place to be. It's the right place today when we have seen the continued decline in achievement levels. This was present well before the pandemic, but the pandemic hastened even more learning declines because of the way the system in all too many geographies handled it and kept kids out of school, out of the classroom for months, if not years on end. And so, I would hope that every elected official would have a posture that supports the family, yep, not the systems. We know that the teachers' unions and all of their allies, they have been the tip of the spear in protecting a system that we all know today hasn't worked for millions and millions of kids. And instead of taking a posture of, you know, we want to join in solving this and allowing for and supporting lots more options and choices, they keep doubling down. And, it's a total political cycle where they support the elected officials and or candidates who say that they're going to support the teachers union agenda. And it's a vicious cycle that keeps feeding itself. But fortuitously also, we've seen in a couple of states, North Carolina and Georgia most recently, state legislators who have changed parties because their party refuses to acknowledge the necessity to support education freedom.
Very good. If you're just tuning in, you are listening to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with former Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos. We're going to take a break and we'll be back in just a moment. Is America a Christian nation? To what extent did followers of Jesus influence the founding of the United States? And what role does Christianity have in the public square today? Hi, this is Richard Nelson with the Commonwealth Policy Center. If these are questions that you're looking for answers for, then join us on Thursday, September the 15th at Kenwood Baptist Church in Louisville. That's where we're holding a conference on Christian nationalism. Join John Wilsey, Andrew Walker, and Colin Smothers as we talk about our history, biblical principles, ethics, and how Christians should engage the culture today. You don't want to miss this important event. So join us on September the 15th at Kenwood Baptist Church in Louisville. For more information and to register, go to our website, commonwealthpolicycenter.org. That's commonwealthpolicycenter.org. And we look forward to seeing you there. Welcome back to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with former Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, and we are talking about school choice. Secretary DeVos, just before the break, we were talking about the state's posture towards parents, that the state should support parents in their choice of what they think is best, the best educational fit for their child. And yet we've seen hostility towards parents, towards parental rights, towards parental concern over what's being taught in the classroom. I've got a family situation where my niece was in a classroom where they were promoting LGBT ideology. And actually a student, one of the fellow students in this high school, came out as transgender. It was a boy who began identifying as a girl and was given a green light to use the restroom of the girls' restrooms in this high school. My sister had an issue with it. My brother-in-law had an issue. They had private conversations with the teacher, with the principal, and eventually they went to the school board, and in case after case, their concerns fell on deaf ears. And there were some other parents who voiced their opinion as well. But eventually, the school sided with this transgender student, and my sister and brother-in-law pulled my niece out of the public schools. We're seeing this happen across the country. Does it take situations like this as a wake-up call for parents to say, hey, what's going on? And then to learn that the schools are not really listening to them when they do express concerns?
Yes, and I think this is another example of how the system continues to really serve itself and not the families that are there to with their children for learning. This is yet another example of the way that the system has revealed itself to have a continued agenda. And, many parents saw that firsthand during COVID when their children were learning at a distance. And they, first of all, many of them saw how, non-robust this distance learning turned out to be. The expectations were very minimal or low. And then they also saw curriculum being presented to their children that they were appalled by. And so families have really awakened to the fact that of things that had been going on for some time within their children's schools that they weren't aware of. And that has really helped build the momentum behind policies that support parental choice, education freedom. And let me just quick comment on the term education freedom, because for many years we've used the term school choice. I like to use the word education freedom or the phrase education freedom because it's a much broader view of what a child's K-12 education experience can actually look like. Mm-hmm. You know, for a year, it doesn't mean that if you get school choice, there's going to be a new school building or another school building go up right next door to the school you've already gone to. No, it really does provide for a whole rethinking of that experience that could be customized for each child. And when you look at education, K-12 education in particular, it is the least disrupted industry in our country because it's been essentially a monopoly since its formation. in the mid-1800s. And now the move and the push to introduce a lot more creative thinking and approaches to how kids actually satisfy those K-12 learning years is being introduced across the country in states that have adopted these policies. And I think it's very exciting because, a child could really have a whole, whole new way of having those learning experiences, including perhaps staying for several classes in the school that they're assigned to, but perhaps wanting to supplement that with a couple of virtual classes or classes in another school education location that their school doesn't offer. It doesn't have to mean a wholesale change from one thing to another, but it can and will introduce a lot more innovation into K-12 learning.
You know, I've never thought of it that way. First of all, the term education freedom, I've heard it before. I think I probably need to begin using it myself because, as you mentioned, it's a broader term. And in a day and age, Secretary DeVos, when we have so many options at our fingertips, I think of how the digital age that we're in has given us access to information that we didn't imagine having 15 years ago, 20 years ago. But the same should be true with our education. As you've said over and over, it is not a one-size-fits-all. But there are so many different, as individuals, we have different interests and different abilities and different aptitudes. And with this technology and with the capability that the digital age affords us, it seems that, to your point, the public education is way behind, and our families are suffering, and our kids are suffering.
Also, I think our great educators are suffering because they've been forced to be a part of a system where they can't really be creative in that system themselves. And I think during the pandemic, not insignificant number of teachers were really frustrated with how their system was handling all of the lockdowns and so forth. And many of them started, joining with a small group of families and essentially starting a one-room schoolhouse for the 21st century. That's working for a lot of families. And I think we're going to see those kinds of settings really continue to grow and proliferate. And that's great for teachers. Education freedom is the best thing for great teachers as well.
Throughout your book, you make the point that public school teachers are not the enemy, that it's really unions and the bureaucracy that are the enemy. They are trying to preserve a system, that really the status quo. And also politicians on both sides of the aisle, you say, are beholden to the unions and the status quo. So for the parents and for the citizens that want education freedom, where do they begin?
Well, it's a great question. You start with your state legislators and your governor. States is where the primary education policy is driven. And if you are intentional about wanting to help advance the notion, the reality of education freedom in Kentucky, check out who is serving in office today. Where do they stand on this? Will they support education freedom policies for you and your family? And if they will, support them. You know, make sure they get reelected. If they won't, help find individuals who will and help them get elected to office. This is a winning issue, both policy-wise, because it's right for kids and families, and politically, it's a winning issue. This is a 70 to 75% issue across the country, no matter how you cut it. And it's really the politicians who had better wake up and realize this, or they will eventually not have a job anymore if they don't ultimately support this this issue. You know, for the states that have passed major programs for families, it's going to become also an economic competitiveness issue vis-a-vis other states. Mm-hmm. And I think I would urge and encourage those who are really wanting to see this advance in Kentucky, pay attention to your state legislative races, in your governor's race and make sure you're supporting individuals who are going to support this and make this possible for Kentucky families.
Secretary DeVos, we are running out of time. We've got just a couple minutes, but I want to ask about your reconciling private schools with public schools. Now, you've been you've given philanthropically to many private Christian schools and some public schools for that matter, but then you were also the Secretary of Education, and there's public education. And so there are some people who might be wondering, how do you reconcile both? You've supported private and you've governed and you've led in the public sector for public education.
Sure. Well, for private faith-based schools, all of them, unless they're in a state that empowers families to make a choice to attend that school, most of them have scholarship opportunities for families who can't afford the tuition. Yeah. And those are the areas in which we have habitually supported faith-based schools. Really, it's the families who want their children to go there, but they don't have the resources to be able to do it. And at the same time, I acknowledge and support this, broadly support the notion that there are many traditional public schools that are serving kids well, and we as taxpayers support them very well. We spend publicly over $750 billion a year on K-12 education. That's over $16,000 on average per student. Far more than most of the small faith-based schools that we have helped other families go, have their children attend. So what I support is a great education option for every child, and one that a family is able to make the decision for, not based on the fact that they can afford it. That's what got me involved with this to begin with, is I knew we were going to be able to send our children wherever we wanted to because we could afford it. But I have been fighting for those families who can't afford to make those decisions, but want to for their kids in the most passionate way possible. And so what we really need to be embracing is a whole plethora of options and choices that families are empowered to make for their children.
Thank you again so much for joining us. God bless you, and you keep up the good work.
Thanks so much, Richard, and all the best to you and Kentuckians. I will be there to help you in your battle however I can.